I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Welcome to this episode of The Frosty Fellas, an online broadcast where Guy Montgomery and Tim Batt, two comedians originally hailing from Aotearoa, New Zealand, repeatedly punch themselves in the balls through cinema. We have just completed our 32nd watch, if my math is right, I think that's right, of Sex and the City, the movie. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, 31 plus 1, 32. Way to go. Good morning, Tim. 9:41 a.m. Melbourne, Victoria time. I woke up after returning home from a Dungeons and Dragons campaign that closed at 3 a.m. I woke up at 7 a.m. to deep dive. Some other comics. Daniel Sloss has organised a game as Dungeon Master. I play the I play the elf Greg. Greg, the second Greg has two G's. But you can call me Greg for short. Having a lot of fun, you know. And I got to say, the difference between the day and night, it's honestly like night and day. That was, of all the watches we've done, one of the most harrowing experiences I've had with any media.
Really?
Oh, just, you know... So there's two different experiences you can have when you're really, really tired. And one of them is when you know that you're allowed to go to sleep. And I would argue that is one of the best feelings that you can have in the world. Mm-hmm. Like when you just let your eyelids shut. And you know when you're so tired that blinking feels really good? And you do a blink and you try to open the blink, but your eyes are just shut. Like, no, no, no. This is where we are. And you're like, oh yes, we're allowed to be here. The other is when you're that tired and you have to watch Sex and the City for the 32nd time.
Yeah, those are the two options. I'm afraid you're going to get sick in Melbourne because it's a lifestyle during the festival season that does not lend itself to good health. And you need to try and get as much recuperative sleep as possible. But
this is
really hampering that, huh?
I've had the last two nights off the beers. So I've been out late, but I've been just consuming unholy amounts of water and quite a confused sort of strategy to keep myself healthy.
No, that's not confused. That's smart. That's good stuff. That's smart.
I know,
water.
But I think, you know, still at the cost of sleep, which does sort of factor in as quite an important part in staying healthy and on top of stuff. So it's I've got a pretty confused body. I'm pretty cross at us for agreeing to this. It does not seem sustainable. You're about to join me in Melbourne, which is I mean, you know, we've often talked about Pavlov's dog, and I do fear, like, I am not in any way, with due respect, I'm looking forward to you being here.
Is that I was actually going to ask, has it happened yet that you don't look forward to seeing me? And you've just answered it, and I am very hurt to hear that.
I know, and understandably too. I don't want to feel that way, but I am being as honest with you as I can. I dread it. I've shut myself out of the apartment I'm living in, like a dirty little dog. where I'm not allowed inside because I've been naughty. And
okay, well, let's talk through this. What are you so worried about with me coming over?
I already feel really stretched for time. It's a busy time of year, and now all of the free time I've had for mental health and physical health recuperation is going to be absorbed by just willfully consuming the worst possible media with you. Obviously in the name of fun and research, but it shuts down the avenues for any free time, which is sort of the crutch that I've been using to prop up my mental stability at the moment.
This is just a simple reframing exercise. You've got to start considering watching Sex and the City as free time, as a leisure activity.
That's the meanest thing you've ever said.
The way that we're going to achieve that is by getting some A-class guests to come on. And we don't... I only really want to watch the movie a couple times with you while I'm over, because we're going to try hard bang out another season of Overlooked and Undercooked, our limited podcast series where we watch Rob Schneider's Netflix disaster with different comedian guests. But we don't need to go fucking hog wild on Sex and the City. We need to watch it once for the live show, and maybe we do one other one while I'm there. I'm there for, like, what, 10 days, I think? That seems all right, doesn't it?
Well, no, because even within the model of how many episodes we're watching, that's not enough for while you're here.
No, it's not. We're not even keeping pace, you know, with the minimum speed limit.
I literally felt sick the whole time you were just talking. I know it is a simple reframing exercise, but it's like, I don't know. I know I've enjoyed it not two watches ago, so anything's possible. But what I just had was like...
You're in a very emotional... Look at you. You are really out of sorts.
Yeah. How was it for you?
I think... obviously not good, but I have had a little bit of distance and a cup of coffee and a Skype call in between, so the edge has been dulled a little bit. Also, of course, I watch a little bit later than you, I think. Wait, does there math on that stack up?
Yeah, you do.
I got up at 7:30 to watch it, though. Like, I woke up just before 6 a.m., because unfortunately my wife's a bit crook, and... it's kind of mean in retrospect, but
this is an old riddle. What does a doctor do when they're sick? If they call up work, they say, I can't come in to work, I'm sick. And then their work says, well, you better get in here fast.
Judging by what I'm seeing, it's watching some David Attenborough in bed on a laptop and mucking around with a dog.
You know you can watch Do you know you can watch David Attenborough on your viewing platform, Tim? Did you know that you can actually
not
do
right.
that?
You're fucking wrong about that. My device is virginal. It is kept pristine for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's for carrying the gals to parade around, night after night, day after day. But I exited the bedroom as quickly as possible because I didn't want to get her germs, and there was no air circulation in the room. It's kind of mean.
So you just got up and got to it.
Got to work, jumped in the studio, got myself a nice cup of coffee and just fucking tucked in. It's so... such a bad film, isn't it?
What did you... Well, fuck. Let's try and find some redeeming qualities just to lighten the air. Did you enjoy anyone's company this week? Did anyone out of the blue sort of, you know, take you out for a drink and show a side of themselves you'd never seen before?
Weirdly, for some reason, Louise did, which I don't think has ever happened before, but she was just like, do you know what's so weird? I always kind of, obviously not in a logical way or in a 100% literal way, but in some way, I always kind of forget she's in the movie, because they have this, yeah, go on.
No, you go, and then I'll tell you what I was going to say.
The treatment of the character is so disrespectful, where they kind of bring her on for no particular reason, really. Carrie says, oh, this was something I laughed at today. When Carrie says, I couldn't think of a better time to get a personal assistant, or where's that effect? That sentence might not be word perfect, but she says that. And I'm like, I reckon I could think of a better time. It was when you were trying to plan a wedding and it put a huge strain on you and Big's relationship. And if you had a personal assistant to do the admin, maybe you could have communicated better and none of this would be happening.
That is so good. I just find it funny. Like, I hadn't really thought about it like this until you brought up Louise, but I've sort of, I think, quietly been treating her as an ally of ours since we started.
Like, oh, nice.
I think of her as not like a mole, but certainly she's in there on behalf of us because she's the only character who's given any substantial amount of screen time who exists in, or like is, you know, is independent of the franchise. And accordingly, she doesn't, you know, the same thing that happens to all sorts of secondary characters in these movies we watch. She doesn't get given enough screen time or backstory or fleshed out enough to learn
I just thought of something. Yeah? Does any other character at any point in the movie see Louise? Is Carrie the only gal who sees her?
Yes, I'm so confident that you're right.
What the fuck? Is she not real, do you reckon?
Is she a spectre?
I think it's some sort of projection of white guilt that Carrie was like, I literally have no friends of colour. I'm going to invent a personal assistant to fill this void. I can't think of any time in the movie where she interacts with another character who isn't Carrie, except for her own family and her fiance.
I think you're exactly right. And even then, that's seen through the eyes or the experience of Carrie. So that could all be constructed within her mind as well. You've stumbled into something absolutely massive here.
This is big, and I didn't even think of it during the watch. That's just come to me now. It's like there's a popular theory that Ferris Bueller's Day Off is all just the imaginings of Cameron, and that all the other characters don't exist. I think that's it. Either that or Ferris is imagining Cameron, but he's not real. One or the other. I feel like this really holds water. That and she's called Saint Louise. That's kind of like...
I can't believe it. She totally exists in a vacuum from anyone else. So I think Carrie's probably, she's under quite a lot of emotional strain. She's feeling, even amongst her friends, we've established in previous episodes that they don't listen when they talk. So she's probably feeling quite emotionally isolated, like there's no real outlet. Professionally, I don't know that we've seen her achieve anything throughout the movie. Like,
She writes the word love on a computer screen, as you mentioned last episode, turns the full stop to ellipses, back to a full stop.
And then back again. But, like, that's after she's taken on Louise. Like,
okay.
Louise represents a mental breakdown shared by Carrie and the Frosty fellas. It is where worlds collide.
This makes perfect sense as well for where she comes in the movie, because Carrie has basically gone through a semi-catatonic state, not unlike Cameron and Ferris Bueller when they figure out that they can't make the odometer on the car go backwards by chucking it in reverse, which I just have to say as a comedy premise is dynamite for something to put in a film. So funny that you could just turn back the clock like that by going reverse. So Carrie breaks down. She's been jilted. This is after, honestly, years of emotional abuse from her partner, Big. They've been abusing each other. They've been lashing out. I think it was Gene Frigger who said these two just shouldn't be together. And the more I think about it, the more true it is. And it's such a horrible moral to put them being together as the audience expectation in this film. So Carrie's damaged. She's gone to Mexico, gotten reasonably blotto with her mates. She goes and gets a haircut, which is a real sign of, like, human grief. That's what people do often when they come out of a big relationship.
She gets the haircut after St. Louise appears.
Oh, that's true. Well, that's sort of other
She
pace,
comes
isn't it?
Straight back. And also, I think the filmmaking represents the mental fraying of the edges of Carrie's mind, because the transition we see into Carrie deciding she needs to get a personal assistant is the shot of her throwing the cell phone into the water. We see it on the fringes of the water on the beach. The water laps over the phone. And then the seediest and dodgiest of all cinema transitions, I cannot believe that they played this out on the silver screen, the water of the ocean somehow transmorphs into a puddle of rainwater with a wheel in it that drives away, and we see Carrie at the front of her old apartment going to start her life again.
Really half-hearted attempt at a, I think it's called a matched shot in film.
It's at that moment. So then what we see, instead of actually seeing Carrie going out and interviewing all these different candidates for a personal assistant job, what that scene actually is Carrie just having a breakdown in a Starbucks. It's just a woman talking to various different people who exist within their mind in a Starbucks until she finds one she likes and leaves the coffee shop.
Holy shit. Okay, let's do a little mental map here, because I'm quite bad at the chronology of how the movie comes out. My memory just doesn't work like that. What happens after we meet Louise? Like, what bits of the film transpire after that? Because that is all of the stuff that happens during that period is now when Carrie has lost her mind after her psychic break.
So after that, we've got... I mean, first of all, Louise immediately comes in and helps Carrie organize her life. So, you know, this is the positive side of this breakdown, is that there is actual value in it, and that Carrie uses it as some sort of, you know, mental support to sort of unpack her apartment, fix her website, start putting the pieces back together. She also becomes a better friend.
Oh, my God. This is so Fight Club, because it means she's hiding those emails from herself. That gets sent to Big, but like she has to pick apart what she picked as her own password to lock emails away from herself. Like she's putting a wall between one section of her brain and another. Fucking hell, this movie just got a lot better.
It truly did. You've unlocked something special, because we've been watching it for 31 screenings as just an ordinary, overinflated rom-com reviving a beloved television franchise. What we didn't realize is that Mattress Pikelet King is actually Mattress Pikelet Shyamalan.
Yes!
He's he's
M. Petrus. No, fuck, how does this work?
He's Trojan horsed us. Beautiful Jennifer done. Hudson is Bruce Willis.
Yeah. No, Carrie is Bruce. Oh, wait, no, you're right, yeah. Yeah. Or Carrie Bradshaw is Ed Norton in Fight Club. Is that kind of unfair? This is
possibly, both.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
What else happens?
How good would it be to see a screening of Sex and the City where Edward Norton plays Carrie Bradshaw and Bruce Willis plays St. Louise.
I'd pay substantial money for that.
It's going to be a lot
it's
of trouble.
It's one of those situations where she gets the haircut and people are kind of commenting on it. It's like, it's almost a red herring. So people are like, oh, your hair looks really good. It's like, yeah, cheers. I've invented a whole other person who I'm treating as a personal assistant and they don't exist.
But she's oblivious. Yeah, no, and the reason she's getting away with it is because she doesn't introduce... I mean, I don't know what the traditional lines of friendship and professionalism are between, you know, someone and their personal assistant, but it seems to me that they're quite buddy-buddy. Like, you'd imagine that Carrie would be excited to introduce this person to her other friends, and yet she
totally
doesn't. Like, no one in her immediate orbit sees what is happening because she doesn't let them. It's such a closely guarded secret.
So, okay. Does that mean that Carrie, on some level, knows it's a delusion? Because
no.
If she was fully in the grips of it, she would attempt to introduce Louise to people and
no,
they'd be like, there's no one there, Carrie.
Do you know, I think because St. Louise is, she has a genuine capacity for empathy. And so what mm-hmm. I think is that Carrie has found this character and is... afraid of sharing someone with these qualities with her other friends. So
wow,
it's a conscious decision she's made to not... I don't even know that she tells any of them that she's hired a personal assistant.
She doesn't. This is what I was talking about when I'm like, I always kind of forget she's in the movie, because the one thread she has is to Carrie, and she's not connected in any way for any amount of time to any other character except for her own set of people, her family and her fiance. This is fucked, man. That's so crazy. I can't believe Mattress Pikelet did this to us for such a long time. He's back in the good books. What a play.
I know. We should write him an email saying we figured it out.
We should.
So, I mean...
What other explanation could there be?
What is our relationship to St. Louise? Because I do feel like in some way she represents us, or she's here to help us.
Yeah. So, here's what I think has happened. Carrie Bradshaw has gotten to a stage in her life where she's 41 years old, and she's taken a look around, which has been... it's a moment that got forced on her by the fact that she got left at the altar by a man that she's been in an emotionally abusive relationship with for a decade. She finally had to take a look in the mirror, and she found out she is not a good person, and she is wholly without empathy. She can't hold a conversation with other people for like 30 seconds without making it about herself. So what Louise is the embodiment of all of these virtues that Carrie knows a person should have, but Carrie doesn't actually know how to integrate it with her personality. So it's this like external... make-believe friend that is the embodiment of everything Carrie knows she should be: helpful, kind, selfless, good at technology, but she doesn't know how to put that into herself.
Oh,
thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it all adds up, and I think that in creating this person, Carrie has also unknowingly created some sort of beacon of hope for us that maybe we offhandedly dismissed or didn't pay, you know, due mind the first 31 times we met her. But
right.
St. Louise represents...
there's more gold in the hills.
Well, I just think that she represents, you know, something for us. In what other films have we had, you know, a spectral character who, when she's not on screen, she's literally capable of anything, because the rules of, you know, reality do not
apply
to
universe.
Her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? You know, she's been thought into existence, or, you know, she's been created from the recesses of Carrie's mind. But so long as she's not engaging with Carrie, she is entirely, you know, she's got total autonomy over her decisions. So when she's not on screen, she's kicking around in the background, you know, probably causing some mischief, probably inspecting the sewers, having words with the rats, you know, literally talking to anyone and thing.
This is a very interesting interpretation, Guy, because you are unlike Dickbot, Brady the Rat King, these sorts of peripheral characters who are getting up to a lot of stuff on the sidelines just outside of the frame of what we see, St. Louise is in a slightly different category whereby she doesn't exist, but you've sort of interpreted her like she does. She's got action outside the screen, but she's just an imagining of Carrie.
But no, because it's the same thing where like it's I think it, I you know I fear speaking out of turn here, but there's a behaviour within schizophrenia whereby, you know, it's difficult to hold people accountable for actions that are performed by someone else who lives within their body.
And like a multiple personality sort of a thing.
Exactly. And that's what we're dealing with here. So she does exist within the real world.
Okay. So less like M. Night Shyamalan's Sixth Sense and more like M. Night Shyamalan's Split.
A film I have not seen, but presumably yes.
It's about someone with split personality disorder. Or not. That's the premise.
I mean, okay. Mattress Pikelet's done a delectable job of only leaving, you know, enough breadcrumbs for us to have the idea of a meal. But, you know, what we choose to do with them and when we eat them is entirely up to us.
Does this then mean that whenever Carrie is by herself and acting out these, I'm presuming she does it out loud, acting out the conversations between her and Louise, she does a Louise voice?
Absolutely.
Who I hasten to add is Jennifer Hudson.
You better believe that's what she does.
If a 40-year-old rich white woman is being racist and no one's around to hear it, does it, you know, does it make a sound?
Sadly, it doesn't exist entirely within the confines of her own apartment. When they go out for cocktails, that is one of the most uncomfortable nights that the bartender has pulled within that hotel lobby. Just watching Carrie Bradshaw, renowned author and sexual anthropologist about town, performing a dual conversation about booty calls and how she doesn't get to have them anymore.
But one of them is 20 years her junior and black. Oh, man. Good fucking times. It really has put a difference. But do you know what? This almost endears me more to Carrie Bradshaw because it's such a huge flaw.
Yeah, it does make it interesting because it's like, you know, previously we've dismissed all of her problems as not actually existing within reality because it's like, yeah, but, you know, it's all sort of wrought upon herself, or I've struggled to find a reason to sympathize with her. But, you know, knowing just how much strain she's found herself under, like, it does make her such a more interesting character.
Yeah.
Caricature.
Do you know, you could almost do the same thing with Smith Garrett were it not for our extensive knowledge of the second film. Oh, and actually, he's in the TV show as well, so everyone's met him and people talk about him. No one even fucking mentions her. No one even mentions Louise.
How could they? You know, I can't mention thoughts you have that I don't hear.
Yeah. Fuck.
I mean, what to me is the biggest miracle of all is that Carrie somehow manages not to refer to or engage with St. Louise in front of her friends. I guess that comes from the fact she's trying to hide them from her. But, like, that must be so... like, maybe the reason that she's socially restricted or, you know, slightly off, you know, selfish around her close friends later in the film is because all of her energy and concentration, instead of going to being a good friend, is going to shield St. Louise from her friends.
Why do you think she's shielding Louise from her friends?
But for the reasons I've outlined before, because she's found a friend who embodies all the traits that she craves in companionship and doesn't want...
But why would you not... Oh, sorry.
She doesn't want her friends to like take a slice of that pie or chop and change the personality and sort of, you know... The more time they spend with each other, the worse these women become. And so by introducing St. Louise to these people, that will begin the decay of this incredible, you know, alter ego that Carrie's created for herself.
But almost simultaneously, by spending more time with these wretched friends, as long as you don't tell them about Louise, it almost makes Louise grow.
It makes her stronger, that's right. It drives Carrie deeper within herself.
All right, so why then does Louise leave? At what point does that happen? It's kind of when she's repaired her life.
Absolutely.
So that still holds water.
Yeah, so I guess Louise is still on the scene when Carrie has the breakthrough with that she's hidden the emails from herself. I guess Louise is a coping mechanism for her separation from Big, because by the time she's back with Big, we know that Louise doesn't reappear in the second film.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And this is also, there's like such obvious foreshadowing by the fact that Louise says that she's going to get married. Like, it just all of a sudden, she decides that her and her ex-boyfriend are going to get married and she needs to leave. And that's Carrie making the call in her head. Me and Big are going to get back together. I don't know how. I don't know exactly when. But we're going to get back together and we're going to get married.
It's literally when they go, when she goes to the wardrobe. So the last thing that Louise says to her is, you left those shoes in the wardrobe. She goes to the wardrobe. Yes. Who's there? Mr. Big.
Fucking hell,
man. I mean, of all of the harebrained theories we've concocted for the various different films we've watched, various is probably quite generous, the four different films we've watched, this one, like, everything fits neatly within the actual framework of the movie that everyone else is watching as well.
Do you know what I like about this? Is that as a listener to this podcast, you heard this happen in real time. All the other theories I've usually penned down when I've like gotten too bored of the film, or just needed to like protect myself against the film. So I've started hiding into the recesses of my own mind, which is quite analogous to what we're talking about, the phenomenon. But you heard that, or you heard the cogs turn and produce this result, folks. You heard it here live first as it unfolded.
Absolutely. I mean, that to me, because you heard who I was at the start of this episode, and you can hear who I am now. I'm a tired boy, but that to me was just like fucking Christmas.
Real shot in the arm. I like the concept. I kind of would want this to apply in real life, that if you get to a point in your life where you're at your lowest ebb and you don't have the personal resources in you to kind of fix your life, but your brain sort of unlocks this extra resource that you didn't know you had to create a character, create an imaginary friend to help you through. Because there's something less confronting about having like a third party, this external person, to guide you through it rather than you have to do it yourself.
Well, like,
it would actually be a pretty good feature of the human brain if this was real.
We encourage children to, you know, be open to and cultivate friendships with their imaginary friends. But at some point in adulthood, that becomes, you know, unacceptable or unhealthy. But what we've seen is Carrie becomes so vapid and self-centered, she returns in some ways to a childlike state whereby it serves an important mental function.
Yeah. Wow. Go us. Did you have a shining light this watch, buddy?
Absolutely not. I hated every second of it. I mean, I was furious the whole time. I was furious and tired. Like, I was literally holding my eyelids open while just fucking fuming. But I mean, all entirely redeemed by this conversation we've just had. I don't want to talk about anything else. Like, if it's okay with you, Tim,
right,
I think this is an episode.
No. Mate, excuse me, Martha, clear all my calls. We're just discussing this one thing this episode.
Absolutely. Did you have a shining light?
Martha, of course, is Martha Stewart, who I have hired as my personal assistant because I'd like some creative tax treatment.
Shining light.
Well, I mean, I feel like I've put a lot on the floor. You throw in.
No, I told you. I don't have one.
Oh, well, not even shining light. I thought we'd just cancel it for this episode. I don't really have one either.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Is that truly us?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. That is us. That's us. Yeah, we're done.
Take the rest
what a great
of the day
episode.
Off. Yeah.
Take the afternoon off, everyone. I love it. We've got a live show coming up in Melbourne. It's sold out. I forgot. But we might have some limited door sales. So keep your eyes peeled on the Twitter. Both Guy and I will retweet it. It'll probably come out of the Little Empire Podcast Twitter account as well. If you do find yourself in Melbourne, Guy's got a live show going on at the moment called I Was Part of the Problem. Before we were talking about it, which you will find at littleempirepodcasts.com/live. We've both got shows coming up in New Zealand as well that's on that same page. And, you know, all the good shows that you want to go to are on that page. I feel so happy. A crisp 30-ish minutes. You got anything else you want to leave the audience with, Guy?
Absolutely not. Oh, to be young again. I'm going back to bed.
Bye, everybody.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out. And we go for it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.